Still no intro. Still waiting on radio's Todd Butts. He's going to Flowrider for 3 weeks. So, but we're back after a month hiatus. It's the Soda Shrimp Bubble. I'm Scotty. That's Jen. Due to sickness and travel and sickness and laziness.
Work.
Kind of just didn't have the time or energy to, mostly energy, to do it. But we're here. We don't know what we're going to talk about, but we're here. we might touch on the Rashard rights, touch on some things that Jen posted this week, and probably talk about our adventures in Maryland. So, here we are. Happy St. Paddy's Day to you and yours. That passed. That happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. It was adventurous. You know, it's not really a big deal here.
No.
Shocked.
No.
Shocked that Grand Forks, a big Norwegian thing, didn't have a big St. Paddy's Day parade. But here we are. Here we freaking are. Thank you to our Patreons, our people who are signed up for Patreon. Patrons. I don't know. It's an odd. They call it Patreon and it's supposed to call them patrons. Why don't you just make it patron? Whatever. Brian, Damon, Mark, Trista, Matthew, Ethan, Chris, Mitch, Angela, and Sean. Thank you guys very much. If you want to help out with the shows on the Face Off Hockey Show Media Faction, it's patreon.com/faceoffhockeyshow. And you can do there. You see the tears and blahzy, blahzy, blah, 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 blah. There we go. All right. So I said St. Paddy's Day happened.
Mm-hmm.
Also what happened on St. Paddy's Day was the good old Rashard riots.
Yeah, we talk about it less and less as years go by.
Is it that big of a... It's when you think about it overall, we talk less and less about it. Does it make it less of a big deal because of things that have happened, or is it just because of time diminishes all?
Yeah, I think it's because not a whole lot of people are left who remember that era, who lived that era. It doesn't have the same implications today that it did then. It's like talking about the Summit Series. It was a huge event for a very long time until it wasn't. Mm-hmm. Until the next generations came along and, you know, had their own events like Sidney Crosby's gold medal winning goal. Like, that's the new Summit Series moment. It was a historically very significant event in wider Canadian history as well, but it's just not given the emphasis it used to.
Just considering the Montreal Canadiens and how much they are about their heritage.
Oh, they don't like to claim this one.
Why?
There's a lot of politics involved. There's a lot of ethnic identity. I don't know if ethnic's quite the right word, but cultural identity.
Ethnic, yeah.
There's very clear lines of cultural identity involved that to this day are still touchy within some areas of French speaking.
But you don't get to pick your history.
No, well, yeah, actually you do. I mean, they do over and over and over and over. The whole league does.
Yeah,
so.
but like in the grand scheme of things, you have to touch on the bad and the good.
Yeah, yeah.
Like this whole Confederate thing, you don't have to tear down the damn, you don't have to build monuments to them.
If you take away the monuments, it doesn't mean that the people and the events didn't exist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you can not talk about the Rashard riots. It happened.
Yep.
It happened, and you can't. And that was a big thing.
It was pretty huge. It was it was the only hockey related riot. I mean,
I also want to say the biggest hockey related suspension to that day that didn't involve gambling.
Yeah. No. And the gambling ones barely caused a blip.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there were two gambling suspensions, and they barely caused a blip in
terms of talent being.
Yeah, and
for that era, for all intents and purposes, Maurice Richard was the guy, right? Or was he one of the guys?
He was one of the
because
guys.
Because he seems to be more of those Canadian teams who had superstar upon superstar upon superstar, and the league itself did too.
Yeah.
You don't hear about Gordie Howe until the 60s, almost, in a wider spread.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, because towards, I guess, the late 50s, early 60s is when the Howe era started.
Yes.
So, I mean, Richard seemed to be the guy.
Yes. But Richard also had that extra cultural burden. And he didn't want it. He didn't ask for it. He didn't seek it. But believe it or not, there were people, there were academics who, there were sports writers, there were, you know, who compared him somewhat to Jackie Robinson. Which I found fascinating.
Interesting.
They were comparing him to Jackie Robinson in that they were seeing him as the first true Quebecois cultural hero. He was the first Quebecois superstar, like really true superstar. There were a few before him, like Nuzi Lalonde, and you know, but
they were more kind of, they anglophone themselves up almost.
Yeah. They were not necessarily working class the way Richard was, the way that most, like the vast majority of Quebecois were. Like if you go all the way back to hockey's beginnings, it's not that the Quebecois weren't playing. They were. They were excluded, along with the Irish, from a lot of leagues around Canada at the time. Hockey was very much an Anglophone sport and remained that way for a very long time, even though there was the Habs. You know, it was not an easy place to be French. Mm-hmm. And in general, it wasn't easy to be French-speaking. Because there was an Anglo minority running Quebec. And so there were a lot of cultural tensions and discrimination. And there's this whole huge history that's really sort of complicated to dig into. I'm trying to think of how to make this easy, but the league itself was very tilted Anglophone.
Obviously, because all the offices were in Toronto, and a lot of the superstars spoke English, and the majority of teams were in English-speaking areas, so
yes,
there was a skew.
And here's a fun fact. It wasn't until the mid-1970s, someone finally had to sue. I want to say it was Marcel Dion. Had to sue to get his contract written in French so that he could read it. Because up until then, NHL contracts were written only in English. So if you didn't speak or read English, you were SOL. You just signed the dotted line where they told you and hoped for the best.
And even if you did speak English, you kind of signed or you're SOL.
Well, yeah, but I mean, French more so, like, you know. So there was absolutely no parity in the league. I can't even think of a French-speaking referee from that era. Just to give you an example of that as well. So, I think the only French-speaking coach of the era might have been Toblake. And I'm not entirely sure how great his... Yeah, it would have been Toblake. So, anyway. With these powerhouse Habs teams of the 1950s... there was a growing sentiment that the league was against these French-speaking players because they had suspended Boom Boom Jeffrey and cost him some points in the scoring race and, you know, all of these things. And Maurice Richard had been suspended and fined multiple times by the league. He wrote a column in a French-speaking newspaper, and he called NHL president Campbell a dictator in the column. And he wasn't wrong. That's the thing. Like, he wasn't wrong. He wasn't also trying to be overtly controversial. He was just simply speaking his mind. Well, then the NHL said, you know, you have to retract this statement and quit writing the column, or else, you know. And so there was more outcry, and, you know, there were a lot of incidents on the ice that were seen to be sort of anti-Francophone, a lot of name-calling, a lot of extra special abuse of French-Canadian players that was going unchecked. Like nobody was stopping it. Nobody was, you know, just, that's the way it was. So then you get to this point where a lot of French-speaking fans are very anti-Clarence Campbell. They think he's very unfair and biased against French-speaking. And then you have this game between the Habs and the Bruins. And what happened was a Bruins player named Hal Lako high-sticked Richard in the head. And the referee signaled a delayed penalty because the Habs had possession of the puck. Whistle blows, Richard skates up to Lako and starts wailing on him. Linesman goes over, tries to separate him, and Richard hits him too. And unfortunately, he knocked him silly. So then he left. He left the ice. Like, he was out of the game. Match penalty, automatic $100 fine. Police had tried to arrest him after the game, and the Habs formed a human barrier. We're like, no way. The Bruins stepped in and said, you know, the NHL will handle this, don't worry. He was never actually arrested. He ended up in the hospital for observation, because he had a broken nose. He had, he was complaining of like abdominal pain, and, you know, it was the second time he hit an official that season. And so, Campbell decided to throw the book at him and toss him out for the rest of the season and the playoffs. And, it was, it was a kind of a high-handed statement.
High-handed in what?
Campbell issued a 1,200-word statement to the press. And, he, at the hearing, Richard had contended that he was dazed. And in truth, he probably had a concussion. So it's, you know, it's valid, but he said he was dazed and he thought that the linesman was one of the Boston players. Mm-hmm. And Campbell's having none of it and saying, that there was a pattern of abuse of authority, and, he was fortunate that, people were effective in preventing him from doing injury to anyone else, and, you know, just this very high-handed wording of, you know, he's saying that Richard is this terrible out-of-control player and must be stopped, and, you know, shame on you, and all of these things. So within minutes, of this being published, the NHL head office, which was in Montreal at the time, but it was in the fancy English-speaking part of Montreal, I should be very clear about that, just got tons of calls, like, shut down their switchboard. A lot of death threats. A lot of the other GMs were saying they should have tossed him out of hockey altogether, or, you know, and they should have tossed him out for another season, you know. It just, there was a lot of dislike for Richard in the league. So anyway, Campbell decided that he wasn't going to back down. He was right. He was always right. No matter what, Campbell was always right.
It's rule number one in the NHL. Clarence Campbell's always right.
And so, despite the fact that he had written death threats and people threatening him on the street and people threatening him over the phone, he said, screw you all, I'm going to the game.
God love him. God love him for that. That just, the guile, like just the ability to do that and just say, you know what, screw you.
And everyone was telling him not to go. The police were telling him not to go. You know, some of the GMs were telling him not to go. The reporters were telling him not to go. Like, everyone was telling him not to go. And so the next home game for the Habs was March 17th. They were playing the Red Wings. There were hundreds of demonstrators that were trying to crash the game. They didn't have tickets, but they were trying to, you know, squeeze themselves in. So the police are there. The police are there before the game, ready for whatever's about to, or, you know, thinking they're ready for whatever's about to happen. There were a lot of very creative signs. And then it got violent. They started throwing ice chunks at the passing streetcars. They started throwing bottles. They started, you know, whatever. One of the problems was that Campbell showed up late. So if he'd showed up on time and slipped into his seat, it might have been a little more okay.
No, but you can't. You got to be a showman.
Right.
You got to be a showman and pick when the time is right.
On top of all of this, he's gotten death threats, you know, all of this. He's going to the game. He takes his secretary with him. This poor lady.
Three of them.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, he took his secretary and his main secretary. She would actually become his wife. But then he took two other secretaries from the office as well. So not only did he think it was fine to go to a game where he'd been, you know, threatened with death, he thought, hey, I'll take the ladies from my office with me. I don't know what his thinking was on that.
They wouldn't pelt him more if he had women around him,
it must be, which, you know, super chivalrous of him, but, you know.
I'd do the same thing.
So people are booing him. The atmosphere inside the game is really angry and tense, and nobody's really paying attention to the game because they all want to get at Clarence Campbell. And suddenly they're pelting him with things. They're throwing tomatoes and, you know, soda cans or soda bottles. Or
anything they can get their hands on.
Yeah. One guy walks up to where Clarence Campbell's sitting, offers his hand like he wants to shake it, and then proceeds to smack him across the face.
What the hell is Campbell doing gullibly? Like thinking, oh, shit, the handshake in this most hostile of environments.
I really don't know what he was thinking. I mean, they had police and ushers around him too, but somehow it just didn't. It just was not smart at all, because he took his normal seat. He didn't take a seat with, like, the owner or anything like that. He just took a seat, mm-hmm. You know. So shortly after that, this guy who wails on Campbell is being dragged away. Someone set off a tear gas bomb right near where Campbell had been sitting. And so then the fire chief says, okay, everyone out. And Campbell ended up hiding out in the Forums clinic. Like, they locked him in, and they're like, well, don't worry, if we're down here for long, we'll find you some sandwiches. Like, like they had this whole...
Concourse was open, so we can get you something. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah. So they had this whole, you know, we're just going to hide you out in this trainer's room, you know, down in the basement. It's fine. We'll just wait here. It's fine. Maurice Richard was able to just walk out the side door. Mm-hmm. He and his wife were just able to walk out completely unnoticed because of all of the insanity that's going on inside and outside. So Campbell writes a note to Jack Adams, the Red Wings coach / GM, declaring the Red Wings the winner by forfeit due to the closure of the forum. Well, then, so you have this crowd streaming out. They were at the game. They were angry. They run into demonstrators outside the game who are also angry. And they start chanting things like, down with Campbell and long live Richard, like vive Richard. And it just turned into a full-on riot. 15 blocks looted, vandalized. Police officers injured, civilians injured. It lasted until about 3 a.m. They're saying that the damage was roughly $100,000. I don't know how accurate that is. I've seen some other figures. And then Jack Adams, after the game, said, well, if they hadn't pampered Maurice Richard and built him up as a hero until he thought he was bigger than hockey himself, this would have never happened. So, you know, that gives you a pretty good insight into how the English speakers felt about Richard.
Sure. And, I mean, it all happened on St. Catherine Street, still in shambles to this day. To this day, they're still doing work on it.
Yeah, and St. Catherine Street, if you don't know, Montreal is a huge thoroughfare. Always has been, probably still will be for a very long time, but it's one of the major streets in Montreal. It's the street they take the parades down, and, you know, it's a major shopping thoroughfare, and, you know, so it's basically in shambles. You know, things are looted and smashed and set on fire. There's cars overturned, there's newsstands burning, there's, you know,
just everything.
It's craziness. So the next day, the press all show up, and they have to make statements. And he didn't, and Richard didn't want to. He didn't want to accidentally start another riot. That was his big concern. Like, he was concerned that no matter what he said, it was going to be the wrong thing, and it was just going to make things worse. But he ended up giving a statement in French and English on television. Because I always try so hard to win and had my troubles in Boston, I was suspended. At playoff time, it hurts not to be in the game with the boys. However, I want to do what is good for the people of Montreal and the team. So that no further harm will be done, I will ask everyone to get behind the team and help the boys win from the New York Rangers in Detroit. I will take my punishment and come back next year to help the club and the younger players win the cup. Campbell himself said, well, it's my duty as league president to attend games. So, you know, it's not my fault at all. Mm-hmm. I have no blame here. Montreal mayor, kind of a flamboyant dude, was just absolutely furious with Campbell and blamed it all on Campbell. So did the city council.
They sent him a bill.
Yeah, so this suspension came when Richard was leading the NHL in scoring. And so the suspension cost him the scoring title. And
to his own teammate, too.
Yeah, yeah, to Boom Boom. And surprisingly or unsurprisingly, I don't know, both, I guess. The Habs fans, when Bernie won it, the Habs fans booed him.
Mm. Makes sense.
Yeah. So, it was just this giant mess of hockey and you know,
culture
and
just shows the, you know, authoritativism of the NHL and how that's
yeah
almost, and he's not wrong in saying it's a dictatorship, because, you know, whatever.
It very much was, because a hearing at the time, if Campbell called you in for a hearing, he called you in, and then whoever he felt was necessary.
Right.
You didn't get to say, well, you know, the linesman was standing right next to me. I want to ask him, mm-hmm. you know, for his statement. If Campbell said no, that was it.
Right.
You were on your own.
There was no arbitrators.
No, right. There was no Department of Player Safety. There was no...
To be fair, you can almost say that there's no Department of Player Safety today.
Sure. I mean, there was absolutely no pretense. It was Campbell's word is law,
mm-hmm.
and he could decide at will, with or without your statement. You know, like, without being able to defend yourself.
Hmm.
So, yeah. It was just this one moment that will probably never happen again, where you have like this greater cultural conflict brewing at the same time you have this internal NHL conflict brewing,
mm-hmm.
and then it all just explodes.
Right.
So yeah, there's some good documentary style work out there on the topic. There's some good books on Maurice Richard as a cultural icon. If you want information on the events surrounding it, you're looking for the topic, The Quiet Revolution in Quebec. There's a lot of books on that as well. So, yeah, a lot of information in there if you really want to dig into it.
63 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's why it's disappearing.
Yeah.
It's like the NHL doesn't really care about anything past the 70s. But, you know, you can say the Canadians got everyone back by getting all the Francophone players first and then having that dynasty.
Well, so. They only had that for 3 years and they really didn't do much with it. So yeah.
It's like the Caps with the incentive picks from Scott Stevens. It's just nothing. Zero. Sergei Gonchar, sure, but yikes.
Yeah.
Everything else. All right, well, there we go.
Yeah.
The Richard Riot. All right. So we were on the travel boat. Plane. Can't get there by boat. So we went to Annapolis to the lay people. And we took in the Stadium Series game between mm-hmm. the Caps and the Glowing Leafs. Which
it was like a long form tie, Dad.
It was. And that was a weird just week leading up to the game.
Yeah.
Because we got there when we landed, like we landed in BWI because it's close enough to my parents' place. And
that's also where the media hotel was.
And I don't know about you, I didn't see any signage.
No, nothing.
No signage at all. And when we go to drafts, there's signage like
everywhere.
Even Jersey for the Thrown Together draft, they had like a little banner.
Yeah.
But nothing. There was not. The media hotel was literally probably 2 miles away from the airport. Not even that. Like a mile. In a little cove next to a McDonald's. And the fast parks. but yeah, there was like nothing. There was no banners, no signage, no nothing.
Whether that's ads, yeah, no
billboards.
Nope.
Barely, like when we were talking to people, barely any people knew what the hell the game was, and they lived not too far from Annapolis. Like even people in Annapolis are kind of confused.
Yeah, they're like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah,
yeah.
Whether that's lack of marketing or just people being apathetic to hockey, I don't know.
Yeah, the very first time I saw an ad for the game was actually No, I think it was actually that Thursday night.
Oh, on the NHL Network
On the
stuff?
NHL Network. Yeah. Like, that was literally the only ad I saw in print, mm-hmm. on billboards.
Not even anything in the papers, I don't think.
No,
like, you would think there would be something.
No.
Nothing.
Nope.
The event was fun.
Mm-hmm.
It happened. It was a thing. Gold medal team was there from the U.S., both the curling and the women's hockey team.
Yeah.
That was fun. Crowd seemed into it, mm-hmm. much as they can be.
Mm-hmm.
Not a sellout.
No.
Lowest attended outdoor game ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Overall, I thought it was all right. It's the right position.
It was interesting in the press box because the windows were fogging up.
And it was windy all week, so like none of the teams were able to practice. So this is the first time anyone endured wind, and we had to open up the windows because it was just, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just like, ugh, boy. time to be alive.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, it was fun. It was okay.
Yeah. There were some fun glitches with game ops.
Yeah, and lights going out. And
yeah.
Just everything else.
Number 74, TJ Oshie. Wait, what?
Fair, that was his old number. That was his old number in St. Louis, and since they didn't have Wes Johnson there, you know, they had this, some jabroni from the NHL.
Yeah, and showing the players out of order on the big screen with the, you know, goal scored by, like.
I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah.
They caught that.
Yeah, they did it twice.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. The game ops aren't that great.
Whoever was picking the music was on point, though.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it was a fun time in Annapolis. That stadium is amazing. That stadium is beautiful.
Yeah, it's really nice.
That's actually the first. I never went to football games, so never went to Navy football games, and that was the first time going out there. It was pretty fun. I always played. I played at Naval Academy, the old Dahlgren Hall there, but didn't actually play or do anything around the football stadium. I always drove past it while in gridlock. waiting for to get into the lane.
But well, there's not. Like one road that circles the stadium. So it's like literally one road in and out to the stadium. Yeah. It's insane.
Well, that's Annapolis for you. They didn't really plan out that. It's going to be a state capital. There's going to be a lot of things here. We're going to have one road. Just go in.
You just follow this one road around the stadium.
There's two roads. See, we went one way on 50. You can go 450 through Crownsville and do the back way into it.
Okay.
But that's like you have to deal traffic lights. It's only 45, and you're just like, screw it.
Yeah.
And you have to go by the old state mental institution. You're like, the hell.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was fun. I mean, Ovechkin scored, and then a couple days later, he scored a 600th goal.
Yay.
And then now the debate begins. A, can he get to 894? B, where does this put him? C, isn't he the all-time leader when you do error-adjusted situations?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, people don't want to let go of the Gretzky thing.
No. Well,
they're just never gonna.
No. Well, we I was listening to the Puck Soup podcast last night, and Dave Loso was like, you know what, he can get to 895, but they're like, you know what, no, with Gretzky with his playoff goals, it's more.
Yeah.
So, and then Greg Wyshynski was like, yeah, no. No, he didn't win a cup, though. He's got 895, but he didn't win a cup. Just like, my God, people.
We went back through the scoring for 1984, 1985, and we found two extra goals that weren't credited to Gretzky. They should have been, and then they now are.
Yeah, exactly. We found 14 extra goals somewhere in this pocket. They weren't actually tipped in. So, yeah, like, that was how do numbers, because everyone's like error adjusted and this, that, and the other. It's like, how can you delineate one from another?
I struggle with it because to me it's part of that greatest of all time sort of, like, when you adjust for error, I'm like, but
how can you?
How do you truly adjust for error? I mean, sort of a time machine and parking Ovi in, you know, 1983.
Right.
You know, I mean, the goalies were completely different.
And so were the players, too.
And so were like, the players.
The players. I don't think there was a guy who was 6'3", 235 like Ovechkin is.
Well, there were.
But
there were.
That were scorers.
Yeah. They were punchers.
Right, exactly. They were the goons. They were the bodyguards.
Yeah. You know, we talk about the dead puck era and the clutch and grab era. And, you know, I mean, it's just...
It's odd. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know why people. Why? When did math become this big a thing these days? Like, when did we start? When did math become a huge part of this?
Well, I've never seen the appeal in, you know, greatest of all time arguments. Anyway, I just don't. I think that they're simplistic, and I think that they are. I just find them incredibly annoying, and I think they're simplistic, and I think they're overlooking a lot of variables. I have to force myself not to roll my eyes or sigh heavily when people start in on this greatest of all time bullshit.
So subjective.
It is so subjective. It is incredibly subjective. And there's so much recency bias.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much personal bias, and there's so much, like, I just.
It's hard to get up for that debate.
Yeah,
because you're not, really you're not going to win, and you're going to get more frustrated and hate people that you thought you liked.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I always like to point back to Joe Malone scoring, you know, a ridiculous number of goals. He's what scored, what, 44 goals in
20-some games,
22 yeah. games, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a ridiculous pace.
Yeah.
And that counts for absolutely nothing.
No. No, because there's the goaltender was a coal miner. He fell asleep in that, like.
Yeah, but, I mean, he was the scoring star of the
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
And it means nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
His NHL stats, he played 58 games, he had 52 goals and 58 points. He was a point per game guy.
Yeah.
Like it's amazing. I'm sorry, that was the NHL. Or that was just with Montreal. NHL yeah. as a whole, he had 143 goals in 126 games.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's more than a goal per game clip, folks, if you're scoring at home or even if you're alone.
Yep.
And then even with, like, just all the other hats, like even in the OHA or the NHA, he had 179 goals in 123 games. The predecessor to the NHL,
yes,
like sick nasty.
Yeah, and it counts for absolutely nothing.
No, it means jack because you know they're all going to say, "Oh, but he scored 123 goals."
Yeah,
in the or 143 goals in the NHL. He's not one of the best. Go screw. I'm tired of the NHL's freaking backwards logistics. I'm tired of this.
Yep.
Although they do have Cy Denny
yeah.
As number two of goals per game, mm-hmm. maximum 200 goals. So you got that. He's right below Mike Bossy.
Yeah, but for the most part, the NHL doesn't like to really admit it existed before 1950, I'll just say.
Yeah, pretty much before everything settled in.
Yeah, like, they just don't really acknowledge their history before 1950.
No, because it's 1950. We have all the superstars. Then expansion happened.
Yeah.
What happened before that? Don't worry about it.
Yep, there were no superstars. There were no, you know, yeah.
Teams that don't exist that you don't remember. It's fine.
Yep.
So, but yeah, Ovechkin gets his 600th. What else do we have to talk about? Next week we'll be doing something about media in the NHL and the progress. Because I saw this little fun fact from your Twitter feed at NHL History Girl. March 14th, 1923, first complete broadcast of a professional game.
Yes.
CKCK, Regina, Saskatchewan, by Peter Parker. Then he took pictures of Spider-Man.
You know, it's kind of funny because growing up, where I did in Western North Dakota, CKCK was a radio station that I could listen to. And in fact, was a station I listened to Jets games.
Mm. There you go.
So.
Yeah.
Still doing the Lord's work as of 1990.
Yeah. See what CKCK is doing now. It's a virtual channel now. CKCK FM 94.5 in Regina. Still there. Still hanging out. Rawco Radio. It's adult hits format, though. It's the Jack stations.
See, when I used to listen to it, it was like an oldies type station, like a classic station.
So Parker called the Regina Capitals games for the station. It was for I don't know who they played against, but it was the first one there. It is also the station was the station conducted the British Empire's first live remote broadcast of a church service. Fun fact, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. Let's see, what was it? Regina Capitals against the Edmonton Eskimos in the Western Canadian Professional Hockey League. 1-0, Edmonton won. Recognized in... By one month, I don't even have a broadcast. Oh, so 1 month later, or 1 month before, there was a broadcast of just the third period between... Midland and North of Toronto and the Ontario Hockey Association, but they said the first ever full game radio broadcast was made of a February 22nd, 1923 game between the Winnipeg Falcons and Port Arthur. CJCG, Manitoba Free Press.
Mm-hmm.
Confused by that. Like, game broadcast versus play-by-play broadcast? I guess.
I don't know what they mean by that either.
No.
I have to look into it, I guess.
They said it was preceded 8 days before Foster Hewitt, March 22nd. They said Hewitt's first broadcast of the third period only could have been on February 16th, 1923, between Toronto and Kitchener, OHA.
By telephone.
That's how you got to do it these days. I mean, hell, sometimes you got to get into it. Remember when doing broadcasting, like, you couldn't, like, if you couldn't find, like, a broadcasting thing, you had to do it by telephone.
That happened with the Sabres game, the Great Blizzard game.
Mm-hmm.
Their play-by-play guy couldn't get out to get on the jet with the 13 other players to get to Montreal. And he called the game from his living room over the telephone by watching the TV.
Well, I remember, like, yeah. Well, I think when they're talking about all this stuff, the game broadcast versus play-by-play, you almost have to think about, because I'm remembering, I think it was Eight Men Out, some baseball movie, where they had, like, the ticker tape about what the stats was, and then there's, like, long pauses in the middle, and they do sound effects and say, oh, it's a hit by blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
That could have been something like that.
Yeah. Just the arena noise or whatever, and then...
I forgot to tell you, when we were at Johnny's house, Johnny P was our host with the most when we were in Maryland. So they were doing NHL Tonight stuff, and they had, like, oh, Corey Schneider's coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And they had B-roll of Corey Schneider in pregame skate.
Mm-hmm.
Just the morning skate, just taking shots. Some genius at the NHL Network decided to pump in the fake crowd noise during a practice. And I saw that. I was just like, what? Like, you got editors. Like, you have the ability to look at this.
And say no.
Why did you not say, oh, B-roll, just put crowd noise in, click? Nope, no, it's a practice. Like, he's taking warm-up shots. Like, you don't need a crowd noise because there's, like, maybe three people in the press and two camera guys there.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was hilarious. It's like, why? Like, why do you not like broadcasting? Like, why do you loathe the work that you do? That you're just like, ah, screw it, it's a B-roll, I'm going to put some crowd noise in there.
Man.
NHL Network's the best. It's the best of the worst. Yeah. unless you have any fun facts to delineate, I think we've kind of hit the ground running.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of set the stage for next week in the broadcast media locale.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. Oh, UND, their season's over.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
And the Willanen watch is on.
I don't think it's going to happen. I don't see. Because if he says, if rumors have it that he doesn't want to sign in Ottawa,
yeah,
he's going to stay another year and then get his free agency like Corbin Knight did.
Yeah.
That said, it's a risk because I think he's 23 now. Because, you know, he's an older guy. Like, he could fall into that Matt Gilroy situation. Born in 9... Yeah, he's 23. 23 as of yesterday. It was his birthday yesterday. Hmm. So, happy birthday, Christian Willanen. So, see what happens. Willanen watch. I think Rick Gardner watch could be on, too.
Yeah.
With Dallas.
Yeah.
And then it's to see where all the seniors go. Pagansky, if he signs with St. Louis, or Cam Johnson signs anywhere, which I don't think
I don't see Cam Johnson signing anywhere. I don't see Pagansky
signing with the Blues.
No.
Unless he Cam Johnson signing anywhere, because I think he could be done.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't look that great this year.
No.
So.
It'll be interesting next year.
Oh, it's going to be fun next year, because everyone's like, oh, this freshman goalie is going to be better than Peter Tomey. I'm like, oh, I like Tomey. Fun.
Well, and Tomey this year was just, he was ridiculous to watch.
Just overall.
Just, like, his first game out there, he was so amped up and, like, screaming over the bench.
Yeah, it was very bizarre, as the backup goalie just yelling at guys on the point to fuck up. And
what? He's chirping the opposing players as they go by. I mean, he's just, like, amped. Just,
come on, guys.
Yeah.
Anywho. Yeah, that was, so UND season's over. Perfectly mediocre season. Tied the record for most ties in NCAA history.
Yeah.
With 10. They were did in by their own doing.
Yep.
They win that game. They were up 3-0 against Miami on. Yeah. And they're in the tournament. They're playing St. Cloud in the first round again, because why not? Just this game over and over again. Groundhog's Day, this damn thing.
Yep.
But no. Now Sioux Falls has weird tournament. Mm-hmm. St. Cloud against Air Force. Sure. And then Duluth against Mankato. Sure. They're not going to have any money.
No.
But so.
Yeah. UND played a lot of mediocre hockey this year and paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
And they never played a consistent game.
No. As I think of it.
They never played a full three period.
No.
Consistent game.
Like, even the ones where they won by a landslide, they had, like, crappy first or second periods. It's like, oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I don't know. We'll see what next year brings. We'll see how it goes. And I don't know. I'm not too... it's going to be interesting to see if... Because if Christian goes, boy, that defense looks garbage. Oh, boy, does it not look great.
You have Colton Pullman and...
Colton Pullman and the field.
Because
that's
Because Pesky didn't do anything this year.
Pesky was down. Rieger showed off some signs of decency, and then he turned over the puck to be the death goal.
I don't think he could have been any more effective if he had just picked it up and put it in his hand, like, here, take it.
Could have just set him up for a one-timer. I think he could have been more effective that way. But freshman played well.
Yeah.
I mean, all the freshman kids started to kick it in later in the season. Jordan Kawaguchi really went on a roll.
Yeah.
Shane Gersich should stay another year. If he doesn't, then that's the Caps' problem then, because he did not look good until the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You could see he really was lost without Joseph Besser being, you know, kind of covering his ass and making him a secret weapon.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see what this freshman goalie does. They say a lot of things about him. I haven't heard squat about him.
I haven't either.
So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, in any case, that's it. They can find you where?
NHL History Go.
You can find me at Scotty Waz. You can find the show at SDR Strong Bubble. We don't really tweet much unless it's a podcast. So there you go.
Yeah.
And saying why we're not doing a podcast. But yeah, that's it. That's all. So for you, I'm Scott. Take care of yourself. And someone else has been the Sutterstrom Bubble in the Faceoff Hockey Show media faction. Thank you to our Patreon people. Patreon.com/Faceoff Hockey Show. You can be like Sean or Angela or Brian or Mitch or Matthew or Ethan or Chris or Damon or Trista or Mark or any of those. Patreon.com/Faceoff Hockey Show for all that fun stuff. Until next time, through. Bye.